form that's entitled Lifestyle for Singles. And just for introduction's sake, I am Jay Spoonheim, and with me is Susie Kintner, and with us soon will be Jeff Dane, both who will participate as panelists or as contributors to the discussion. I kind of sense a need to apologize to a couple of people who, Eden is one, but also others who with him first suggested this particular form topic and had a little different edge to it in mind than what's come out. And I just simply want to acknowledge that. There are a variety of concerns that have been expressed to me, and we have, as you have noted, taken a very broad approach to the question, Lifestyle for Singles. I'd like to try to pursue the issue in three stages during the forum sequentially, taking one at a time and dealing with it. And the three stages are, first, take note of a transition that has and is occurring in our culture, in our society, which namely can be identified as from depreciation to appreciation and affirmation of singleness as a way of life. I think it's really important for us to note that transition. As a person who was single for 36 years, I can testify to the fact that appreciation and affirmation was not a large quantity in my life. And to see that change, I really celebrate, because my experiences personally were not infrequently painful and a real struggle. So I welcome that. We're going to speak to that as one, stage one. Two, we're going to look at some continuing problems that continue even in the face of the affirmation. Even though there's affirmation, that does not mean it's problem-free, and we're going to take a look at one specific dimension of that. Jeff's going to speak to that. Thirdly, we're going to do something, I hope, and we're going to devote also, hopefully, the majority share of the discussion to this dimension, and that is, what are the key concerns then that now face relationships between singles in this newly affirming kind of atmosphere? What are the key issues? For that, we're going to break into small groups, see if we can identify two, three, or four issues that we think are significant, come back together, see if we have consensus on any of those, and take those which are the most prevalent and go into discussion on them. Is that clear? Hopelessly muddled. Okay. Let's take them in order and see how it unravels. First, to take note of the transition from depreciation, is one way of phrasing it, to appreciation and affirmation of singleness as a way of life in our culture. And Susie's going to share out of her own personal life and experience on that.
Well, first I went to kindergarten to get a husband, and that didn't work, so I went to elementary school. And that didn't work. I didn't find a husband there. So I went to junior high. And after junior high, that didn't work either. So I went to high school and didn't work there. So I went to college and it didn't work there. And then I went to seminary. I figured I couldn't lose there. You know, didn't work there either. So now I have to go on for more work. But so
you're tenacious, Susie.
Yeah. I think the easiest way to phrase it for me is the transition from thinking of myself as a half, looking for another half to make a whole, meaning marriage, to feeling much more of being a whole person in myself, looking for another whole person for a committed relationship. The problem with that terminology, of course, is that we're never, ever a whole person. But we'll just leave that as a parenthesis. I was raised in a family with three older brothers and a father who loved me dearly and who decided what I needed and gave it to me. Well, there's no man I've ever dated who can stand up to that kind of competition. I've been waiting for the prince on the white horse to come by for quite a while now, and there's no prince on the white horse. Through high school and the early years of college, to state it crudely, I was I everything could be allayed or shafted so that I could have someone to date. In other words, I gain my identity from the man at my side. As I have continued through 4 years of postgraduate education, a lot has changed. I feel differently about myself as I've grown and developed, and I have discovered a lot of things. First of all, being single. I like being single. There are a lot of assets to it. And instead of defining myself as not married, in other words, a negative definition, I feel that it's a very positive situation. Not always that easy. For example, going to a restaurant and eating alone. And I don't mean Sambo's, I mean a restaurant. The restaurants in the Bay Area are, I haven't had any difficulties there. One time I was in my collar, my clerical collar, coming home from Seattle, and I stopped for dinner, and the host did not know what to do with me, and the waitress did not offer me a drink before dinner. But the man, and all these people kept going, "Hey, Harriet, look at that. The assets. You know, what is she, a nun or a nun?" So the transition for me has been from a half, thinking of myself as a half, looking for another half, you know, like some big electromagnet, to thinking of myself as much more of a whole person. And the biggest myth to come over, that the biggest hurdle for me has been, where's the prince on the white horse? You know, when will I be like Snow White or Cinderella and get kissed and magically wake up? That has not happened yet. The assets to being single for me now is the flexibility and the tremendous intimacy that I find, especially among women friends. In high school and college, that was not the case because, of course, we were competing for the men. Don't know if you've ever thought about that. When I was a freshman and sophomore at Peel, I was on a crew team and a crew shell rowing. At eight people in a boat, and that thing doesn't move unless there's teamwork, and that was kind of the beginning of the turning around. And in seminary now, especially, the women friends have been very, very important and necessary. The liabilities for me right now for being single is continuity. It is really hard to keep any thread of continuity in my life, because just as I change classes every quarter, and live in Berkeley for 9 months and Port Angeles for 3 months, it gets really confusing. It's kind of like stepping in Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine on Bullwinkle and Rocky. Where am I going to end up? The second liability is, and I don't know if this is a Bay Area thing or if this is all over, is narcissism. It's real easy to be selfish or narcissistic. At the same time, I want to spend dinner on myself sometimes, and sometimes that can be attention. The third, there's another myth then under liabilities, and that's that other women's spouses, men, are safe because they're married. So therefore, I can flirt, or I can hug, or I can be coquettish, or whatever. And somehow the sexuality aspect of our relationship is not something to be dealt with. Well, that's a myth. Married men are not safe. And in fact, many times single women are targets of married men in employment situations or other places. I think that's all I want to say.
I think you've said enough, Susie, on that last time.
Thank you, Jim. The other thing I want to state is that everything I'm saying tonight is a personal statement, and it's said on between 9 and 10 o'clock or 10:30 on July 23rd. All this stuff is very much still forming and growing, and I don't mean it to stand forever. I'm still struggling with a lot of the things. The other thing is, it's really nice to see so many single people. Have you noticed how many married people there are in Golden? They're all over.
Oh,
it's really nice to see a sea of single people.
No applause, please.
Defensive?
Susie, I really appreciate your candidness and your willingness to kind of share out of your experience. That I really respect, and the kidding is in love, as you well know. I'm hearing a couple of things. One is that you're saying you're defining two kinds of problems, I think. You're telling me in part, or telling us in part, that the transition hasn't fully occurred in our culture, that there are still liabilities, that the transition is incomplete, that we're kind of moving gradually towards that, but it's no panacea in any sense of the word. That there are still cultural things that are happening that are over against.
I think the best example of that is that I'm from a small town, 17,000, Fort Angeles, out on the coast, of a graduating class in high school of 400, probably 50 of us went to college, well, no, 50 of us graduated from college. Another 25 went on to postgraduate work. Everyone else in my class is married and has kids and now are beginning to get divorced. And I go home every summer and kind of catch up. And the first question is, Suze, how are you? Got anybody special? And I go, huh? Judy. No, you know. I mean, I don't mean to tell you I've never dated before. That's not true. But there's that seems to be a very important way for people to catch up with me, you know. Are you married yet? And not yet. Hasn't been the right person at the right time.
Let's talk a little bit about this dimension. First of all, from the social, how many of you experience the change from a kind of a depreciation or lack of support to one of affirmation and appreciation in this being single in this society?
I don't know. I think it's, I don't find it hard to be single in society.
How old are you, Nikki?
20.
The point is well taken, though. The point is well taken, Mr. Nikki, that it is perhaps at 20.
I know people who are older, and they don't know.
Because you weren't married, but the questions were the same, you know, how come you're not? The parents asking, when are you going to get us grandkids? You know, everybody's sort of saying, you're not really complete. I think especially for women, you're not really where you're meant to be. You're not really complete. And I think maybe we're more subtle about it now, because there's more allowance to be free, but I do think he's quite still a little bit better.
Are you saying it was particularly a phenomenon that it struck women only?
No, I think
or largely
in some ways on women.
Well, another thing is, I don't know, like in Seattle, we go out as groups, but there's not a lot of single dating going on. I don't know why, but I think the guys are scared to death. But
okay, unless you're okay, that's one person's experience of finding it fairly comfortable to live this stage of the game singly in society. How about others of you? Are you finding is there increasing affirmation of your being single that you experience from people around? Yes.
It's difficult, I think, in the seminary. It's difficult for women seminarians to be single. But I don't find that affirmation in the church so much of singleness, especially of male seminarians. Yeah. I've known of at least one person who graduated single from seminary who had his district president say, I'm sorry, but we have to give preference to people who are married because of family commitment.
Yeah.
You might want to look for other work for a year or two. And it's bad, but it's true. And everybody says, it's just like everybody says, yeah, we're supportive of women clergy, but, yeah, we're supportive of male single clergy, but we're going to lean a little stronger if you have a family and a wife, because we'd like a first lady in the congregation.
I really appreciate that perspective, because I personally experienced that very, very clearly in my life. And I can't be persuaded that it was any more difficult for a woman than a man. I'll argue that point strenuously. So just to let you know where I stand. But really, that's why I wanted to pursue that a little, because I have a hard time seeing inequities in the system quite as clearly as many, in terms of one sex being favored as over against the other. But that I'm supposed to moderate, not dominate. How about some other comments on this? We're hearing that it's difficult for both, but are we hearing that there is any growing affirmation? Do you feel that there's any change occurring in society in this way? Maybe we've misrepresented it. We're operating on the assumption that things are improving for singleness, that there is greater affirmation in society.
I think that's true just because of the transience of things now makes it easier to stay single.
For example,
you don't necessarily stay in the hometown that you grew up in. And,
okay.
And
mobility.
It depends on whether you're from a rural or an urban area. Right now I'm working in kind of a rural area. And I think it's much harder to be single in a rural area than just in an urban area.
What are other factors, both positive
and negative? I don't even get offering envelopes from my own church. I started attending the church my parents went to, and they consider me part of that family, so I don't even get offering envelopes.
then the other thing happens where you go out with other couples, and if you're single, you're kind of always the third person.
Right.
The third or the fifth, right.
I can hear some general affirmation of that point of view. Identifying with that feeling. Okay.
What about the church that calls their... they have a group that's called Pears and Spares.
Oh! Thanks a lot!
Yeah.
Right, Spares.
Cuteness is not necessarily helpful, is it?
Somebody once mentioned that church dinners always set tables of eight in English, and everyone leaves, a single person, you sit down and all of a sudden there's probably empty seat across from you. They suggested starting to seat all tables with like five or seven and really throw people in the book. That's easy, then I don't know what to do.
Well, that would make both people of a married couple talk, too.
Yeah.
Do you ever notice sometimes how only one person in a couple talks?
Mm-hmm.
When they sit together?
Right.
You know, if you did that, then they'd have to talk.
Right, now, a lot of hands, so let's take them in order. Okay?
Another thing I've noticed with single people is that they get pressure from their parents about not being married.
But that surely can be a strong influence.
Right.
I don't think we can.
My sister has gone through that for about the past 6 years since she was divorced. She has gone through the pressure of not really being accepted, and one of the reasons why this is because she's married.
Yeah, would the divorce be a concern there too? In the family value system?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I would guess that would be another dimension of that. The tension is there, surely. Okay.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
I lived in a neighborhood in Milwaukee that was, last summer, that was mainly like apartment complexes. It was on the east side, and I moved into this communal household without knowing anybody that lived in the household. And everyone there was single. But when I started to get to know people, say, a couple years older than I was, 25, 26, a lot of those people were people that would say to me, yeah, I'm living with Jane right now, but I'm thinking about moving in with Marcia, I mean, it was like there were these relationships that would go. It was like people that were between the ages of 22 and 30 that were living and that were making art and making love with all different kinds of people. So that when you would go out with some, you go out to a party, you would see this just ardent display of affection between a man and a woman, and then you'd see the man leave with the woman he was living with, and you would find out that that man had last month lived with the woman he had ardently hugged at this party, and you just never knew who was going to be living with who. It was just a real interchangeability, you know, and it wasn't like people were really happy with that, but it was like the sense of commitment I felt was so, you know, Harvey was talking about transience. Transiency, and boy, it was just with relationships. It was as though, you know, I can't really commit myself to too much because I'm working, I'm painting right now, or I want to be a filmmaker, and I may be moving to Chicago, going to the Institute of Arts. And so, when I'm here and when I'm with you, when I'm living with you, it's cool. Let's celebrate the moments, you know. And I myself stupidly got involved in a relationship like that and in this communal household and found myself intimately involved with one of the members of the household, only to move out and to go back to school, to come back to visit during Christmas and to find someone else living in my room and living with the man that I was involved with, you know. And it was just very scary to me because I began to think that this show of affection or this sort of commitment or this I love you, you know, when you're walking by Lake Michigan after having had a pizza and a beer at a place on Downer Avenue, you know, and you're feeling really good. And all of this stuff is just, it's all bullshit. And I was very, you know, and I was just thinking that there are a lot of people that are just really looking for relationship but not commitment. And those, I met more independent women that were involved in the same way as men were involved in that way. And it was as though the women had to maintain this kind of independence too, you know. This kind of, what I'm saying is that it was career over commitment.
Okay, what you're saying though also is that what's happening in society which allows for a greater kind of freedom is not necessarily helpful.
Yeah.
You're saying that permissiveness is not necessarily affirmation.
Yeah, very scary.
Okay, and then can be in fact anything but what it looks like on the surface.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I think that's important to note. Those kinds of shifting mores of the society, which on one hand look like greater freedom and greater flexibility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are in fact not necessarily as affirming and helpful as we'd like to think at times. Go ahead.
One area I think that, you know, maybe society is affirming a little bit more singleness is that single people are much more able to enter into major contracts like buying homes, and you're seeing, especially single women make up, I think, about the majority of home buyers right now, and you know, people that are now looked upon as, you know, even if you're single, you can buy a house and you can enter into that kind of contract, whereas at one point I think it was a lot harder, and singles, you know, I bought a house with another person, and you can, you know, enter into that kind of thing, and it's not, you can have two different names, it doesn't have to be man and wife, husband and wife.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely important dimension of change that is affirming. Mm-hmm. That those traditional blocks have been lifted and there is now a much greater freedom. Right?
I just want to know if we're including in our definition of single the widow or the widower and the divorce or the parents without spouses. To me, I think in the church that's even a more crucial area. Talk about fifth wheels.
Yeah. We, in our definition, are assuming that this is across the board kind of understanding of singleness. And I suppose, that's the assumption.
I'm just wondering, if there's anybody here that can speak to those concerns, I'd appreciate hearing their points of view.
Anybody? Yes.
I'm not one of those. But I've been working closely with a group of singled, what we're calling them. These are people who have been married or at one point or the other and are no longer married for a variety of reasons. And they do not want in their group any people who have not been married before. And the reason they don't is they say they don't really understand. They think they've got difficulties. They are naive compared to what we've gone through. And I've been neither, really. I've never been single very long. I've never been single. And you know, I try to empathize all I want, and that's why I'm here tonight, to listen. At this point, since I've heard more of their side of the story, I tend to agree with them. I'm trying to get some balance. And their point simply is that they've had to bear some pain that people who've never been married didn't have to do it. Whether it's a divorce they went through or death, it's the kind of pain that they, you know, they feel nobody else can understand. And it involves having developed a dependency that's no longer there.
That is not used to. It's a life that they really want again, but it's gone and it's been taken from them. Rather cruelly in many instances. And hurt and bitterness and pain and disgust. They're needing to be expressed. Different ballgame is my response to the question. Completely different ballgame. On the other hand of that, on the other hand though, I think they've got some advantages that, that people who have not been married before do not have. And that is, I think their status has risen remarkably more than young single parents, for people who have never been married before. I think they're, I think divorcees and widows, widowers, are much more accepted in the community, the church community, than young single for many years.
Appreciate that. Anybody like to respond to that?
Okay, I want to add one thing. We talked about divorced people, we talked about single people, married people. I'm a separated person, so I'm not divorced. I'm still married, but yet there's a unique situation where you don't know what to do, you know. Someone asks you, well, are you single? And you say, no, I'm married. Where's your wife? My wife is in Chicago. So I say, I'm not free to be single, but I'm not really living married. And it's difficult for me to deal with, and it's difficult to deal with relationships with other people.
I think it's really important to make those distinctions and different aspects of singleness because the experiences are different. We're not making a judgment of one's more difficult or any other. We're simply identifying the fact that there are those differences and they do make a difference in how one perceives singleness. I keep forgetting to look up. Yes, please.
I can't tell if there's a real change in people's opinion of singles. Because I don't know if the change I see is due to a change within myself or an attitude, or if it is really within the general population. I tend to think that, agreeing with someone else, that in rural areas it's much less acceptable to be single than, say, in the city settlement. Where I work, Forks, Washington, all the people.
When you're in Seattle, there's more diversion.
But in the smaller communities, there's a strong, impulse that is pushed to get you married. Someone has once said, their misery insists on company. They want to make sure that that's the situation. But there is, it's the, in the smaller community, I really do believe that there is a, that the intolerance grows somewhat out of envy of that freedom, that at least the appearance of freedom, the mobility, the, yeah.
I'm young and married, so maybe I didn't have to go through the single bit too long, but I do remember back in college when, I don't know, I've always felt like I wanted to get married when the time was appropriate and the right person came along, but I don't know if it was a change in the society where everyone is trying to affirm the single person and being single is terrific, you know, that whole attitude. But I felt like an oddball because I wanted to get married. And especially if you express that you maybe felt a hurt about, like I hear tonight, that you feel a hurt maybe about being alone sometimes or being by yourself. And especially if I would express that to another single man, the idea was, oh, better get out of this one fast. You know, I don't want to be around a girl who wants to get married, you know, because she's dangerous, or I don't know what the deal was, but why is that?
Anybody want to respond to that?
I'd love to hear the men's response.
It may be the fact that in some ways that someone doesn't want to take the load, so to speak, the responsibility that goes behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people cop out that way, saying, well, I still have to finish up school, I have to finish up my career, so I can't be tied down, or I can't make these commitments.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't always expressed to someone I was involved with at the time, but maybe just a real good confidant. But you know, the looks were always kind of sideways.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it was very difficult to be that vulnerable, to say this is something I'd like, and I'd like to share this, my life, with somebody. And it was almost as if I should be this invincible, liberated, non-lonely woman.
Would you like to respond?
Yeah, I went through kind of the same thing. There was a time about 3 or 4 years ago where I really wanted to get married, which seemed kind of strange, you know? Really, I felt just the same way. But now I'm finding as time goes on, marriage seems less and less attractive to me. I just had my 5th year high school class reunion last summer. And I'm already seeing the divorces and stuff like that. And I'm going, hey, you know, I'm a lot better off now. You know, I'm only 24 years old. And I don't know, I wanted to get married kind of bad when I was just out of high school, it seemed like. And now I'm farther and farther away, but I'm honestly enjoying myself very much. The flexibility, especially.
Okay, one more comment. Let's...
I wonder if we might want to, one more comment, Ben, well, talk about what does it take for a person to be ready to be married? I mean, that's something that's important to look at, because when I got married, I wasn't ready, and I didn't know it. And the comment she made about wanting to get married and people being scared off, I think a lot of people just sort of sense they're not ready. And I'm not sure what it takes to sense that you are ready.
I think, too, on that comment that you made back here was that to be overtly dependent was kind of stepping into the stereotypical role that that the woman took. And that, perhaps, now this is from my side, perhaps that was calling for the stereotypic role on the male side of, oh, let me protect you. Perhaps not. But... it reminds me of one of my brothers saying, Suze, if you want to get married, don't ever be desperate, because that will scare the men away. I can remember him clearly telling me that when I was in high school. You know? And I remember those things too. I mean, that was just a taboo, never to say, because perhaps that was a manipulative statement to get the man to say, oh, they're there. I don't know.
It wasn't, but I know the feeling, and I felt like that was how I was being responded to. Certainly not intended that way, and not felt that way either.
Yeah.
Well, I know how I respond to men who I know want to get married. One, I won't have anything to do with them. And
very same approach.
Yeah, it's very same. But my reason for responding that way to them is basically that I feel that they're not evaluating me as an individual, but just that they're so desperate, they'll take anybody, and it doesn't matter who I am. And I just don't want to mess around with that.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that in terms of this question, we're kind of running that string out on that one, and we spent more time on reading than we probably need to about the transition. I'm hearing that we're not terribly clear on the experience of greater affirmation. There does seem to be some good, clear indicators that there is greater mobility and greater acceptance of singleness, but it's not necessarily clearly experienced in ways that are terribly helpful, maybe, to many. Let's go on to the second dimension, which goes on with some of the continuing problems of singleness that raise questions for us or force us to grapple whether we want to or not. Jeff, you were going to talk about one specific kind of challenge to singleness that I think is extremely important for us to look at.
I was going to and am going to deal with the topic that sort of Vera touched on, that's the career over commitment. But first, if I might, I'd like to indulge in a story, since we've been talking personal reflections and whatnot. We were talking some before we got into this discussion about families, always asking, well, you know, got anybody, you know, and when are you gonna get married, and all that sort of thing. And I heard a lot of that for a long time. I have two older sisters who are both married and have wonderful children and fine husbands, and I enjoy them all. And I used to get these questions. I used to get the questions every time. And I'd hum and haw and shrug my shoulders. And pretty soon the questions sort of died down. And last fall, they were having a rummage sale at my mother's church. So I was helping her gather things, and we went up to the attic, and she was pointing out the things to take, and she says, "Oh yeah, take that crib too."
No one will need it now.
We don't need this anymore. So I guess, and I don't get the question, so I guess I'm the lost cause.
We still like you, Jim.
Anyway, that's my story. What I'm going to be reflecting on is, again, a lot of personal things, and one personal item in particular, dealing with singleness and career. And this is something that I don't think is unique to single people, but since I'm single and this is the topic of the evening, I'll just share with you some things that I've observed about myself and some friends, and it certainly is not true of every single. Happy are they for whom it is not true. when we were talking about the other half, and I just jotted down a note to myself, you know, if you don't have another half, maybe the danger that you run is that your career becomes the other half. And I know in my case, until recently, that has been true. I have married myself to my career. And I have seen it in myself and other people too. And I think it's a real danger. One thing, we really thrust, as society thrusts, I think, everybody into this mold, in a sense. So often you hear the question, when someone goes to college, well, what are you going to be? Or what are you, you know, why do you have to be anything? I'm a person. But, you know, you're thrust into this thing about, you know, your identity becomes career. And, you know, God help us that we get out of that mold. And I know I'm employed by the church, and I'm employed working with people, and I like it. But it can become a burden, too, in that you can totally immerse yourself in this, marry yourself to this cause, this thing, and in the process lose track and lose focus on what your own goals and beliefs are. I've seen this in other single friends of mine. Perhaps you've seen it in friends, perhaps in yourself. And I've been dealing very recently, I'd say within the last year, of really pulling myself out of this and taking a good hard look at what I believe in, what my values are, and how I'm going to let that direct my person, my actions, and let my career be subservient to that. This might sound like, you know, as I say this, it really sounds simple. You know, I think maybe I'm the only one that has this problem. But I've seen it happen to other people too. And when you have no one that you're relating to closely, I think that's one of the pitfalls. You're seeing the pressure of acceptance, and where does the acceptance come? But most heavily from your career. And that's the way maybe you get caught up in this trap. I will only share a couple more things. I in this whole experience, I have come to appreciate and be more sensitive to not only other single people, but married people, and more importantly, the family I do have, particularly my nieces and nephews, my sisters. And I rejoice more in going home now after 32 years than I ever have. Because I've developed a new understanding, appreciation of them as people. I think it's the same old thing. You get to understand yourself as a person more, you understand other people as people. So, career over commitment. How it was coming out in the situation that Pierre was in was one. I didn't quite follow that whole thing, but these artistic people who are sort of maybe very flighty about their commitment to other people and then just grasping their career totally and not caring about other people, I think that's a real pitfall. Or, and on the other hand, embracing your career so totally that you lose total track of yourself, even though you might be caring about the people you're working with. So I will stop there. That's just my little experience I wanted to share with you.
I guess as I listened, I'm once again reminded of what a phenomenal community this is that we share for how many ever days we are here at Holden. It always kind of overwhelms me with that kind of willingness to, you know, just kind of say who we are and where you are, and it's just really marvelous. And I thank you for that. I know we all feel that, both you and Susie. Can you respond? Can you identify with or struggle with Jeff and that kind of issue in your own lives? Or is there something you'd like to move on in that area?
I felt similar things kind of the war between deciding what I want to do with my life and wanting to have goals for my life as an individual, but wanting to be open to human beings and the possibility of intimacy and all, you know, that might bring. I think that it can be difficult at times. It has been for me in terms of how I was raised, very traditionally, with expectations of marriage and all of that. No pressure now for my family to get married. They say enjoy it, enjoy being young and free. But at the same time, I was raised with all those old norms and values, and so I draw up short sometimes and realize that how I react or how I behave is not out of what I'm planning for my life, but out of those old values. And sometimes I feel a real conflict within myself between wanting to be independent and having a plan for my life. And
would like someone like to respond or move with that more?
Jay?
Yes.
You can't see me back here, but I can identify with Jeff.
I can identify with Jeff, really. Even I've only been married about a year. And I can safely say that even though I've made the commitment to get married about a year ago, the same problems still occur. Just because you make the commitment doesn't necessarily mean that the old ways of letting careers sometimes get in the way of something that may be more important still happen. And I suspect that that's true of people that have been married longer than myself also. So I'm not sure that that's necessarily just a problem of singleness. Although it's at a time of kind of crossroads of deciding career and commitment and all that, that singleness, anyway, young singles go through, it is kind of a crossroads, and some people feel that they have to do the choice of one or the other, and I'm not sure that's probably the best way. You have to be a kind of both, a balance. I guess everything is a balance when it comes down to it.
Thank you. I'm sure that many would say that marriage is a temporary interruption in that problem. There's an effect briefly where the values change and maybe the expression, but then very soon you're back into the... I know spending a lot of time in marital counseling, that's one of the key problems. The person just spending absorbed too much by what they do and the demands and the stripping. You know, the part of we struggle with that each time.
Well, I guess I'm a novice, I think it's really important what you're going to do in your life if you can pass marriage or not. I mean, if you decide to be a pilot or, I don't know, be a sea captain or someone, and leave your wife away for, you know, 2 or 3 years by yourself, then I think it... You have to look at the other person too and think, you know, well, can that person live where I'm going to live too and go where I want to go? So.
Yeah, that question of equality, of course, is always a key consideration. We're introducing a dimension of the issue that, to me, is extremely important. I'm persuaded that one of the issues that's most neglected and most importantly, at the same time, for our lives, is the whole issue of vocation, understanding vocation. And in our heritage, in our Lutheran heritage, Luther spoke to that so eloquently, and yet somehow we've kind of let that evaporate. A sense of calling in life, you know, for everyone. You know, it's almost hopelessly narrowed down today to clergy, and it's just... That's frankly obscene. That sense of calling that we all have is so important, and yet we, to get a handle on that, begin to move with that, and to begin to grow in that.
Vocation versus occupation.
Yeah.
Occupation is what you do.
Right.
Vocation is where your passion and, you know, what you'd rather do than anything else, and what you're called to by God.
So similar to you.
That's true.
Oh,
that's
thank God
true.
When that's the case. But most of the statistics that you read today find that that is not the case. There is no sense of calling in what a person is doing. In fact, job frustration, what one is doing, is an extremely high quotient, extremely high quotient of success factor. I mean, it's a crisis issue as far as I see, and I, you know, I sense the issue. I haven't done the homework. Isn't that about where we seem to stand? I mean, that's a judgment on me, but I really feel that's a place where we could all benefit and would help to get at some of those dilemmas that seem to come to us when it is a matter of, do I choose old values and live those out, or do I follow that sense of calling? I think maybe by doing that kind of homework, that issue will clarify and shape differently for us.
Comments?
That's a life issue that applies to singles, marrieds, you know, across the board.
And I guess that's the thing I'm trying to learn with you. Singles understand that. You know, what you were saying just struck what's in my mind. You know, I've been married 13 years and I'm still struggling a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if singles know that. Just because your marriage doesn't stop.
I think that's one thing I am hearing, come to think of it. I appreciate your focusing that. I think one thing I'm hearing out of this group is a lot more confidence negatively derived confidence. As many of you watch the deteriorating relationships with those around you, peers, and you see the kind of stuff that's going on, you're feeling much more comfortable and confident in your thinking. That was never true for me. That was never true for me. First of all, the incidence of divorce was much less accepted. I mean, the whole thing was kind of gloss. And I lived with a much different orientation. I'm hearing, just let me reflect that to you. I hear a very different kind of orientation in that one sense. Sir.
Somebody else has a hand,
yes.
I also was thinking about the fact that you said at that time the divorce rate was really low.
Was lower.
Okay. Now, back, it might have been more of a taboo to separate, or
really?
People would hang on saying, well, because of the kids, you want to hang on.
And keep up the facade. Mm-hmm. Put up an image, keep up the facade.
Right. And they lived miserably.
Exactly.
For years.
Exactly.
And so many divorces today also are people that have been together 16, 18, 20 years. 25 years. And then.
The highest rate of divorce in the parish I serve was between the ages of their married ages of 15 and 25 years. Without question.
You have been married.
Have been married for 15 to 25 years. Without question.
Been
that for all the last 5 ages.
I read the lady at the place where I worked, she got divorced 2 years ago, and she spoke to 60. I think she was married 35 to 40 years. Mm-hmm. She's just starting to realize what it's like to live.
Something
I find is right now, some of my very closest friends have divorced women, and I have to be careful not to become too cynical, you know, in relationships to their kinds of stories, and also, you know, remain open to, you know, making my own decisions and not, you know, being overly influenced by people that are, you know, have had bad situations, and, you know, wrong and bad, and people end up in divorce, and, you know, trying to maintain a balance in that respect. You know, to not get too cynical and think, well, that's a single, you know, and to be a little more open.
I guess that's what I'm trying to say before, something like that, where if the decision not to be married because all these friends of mine are getting divorced.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of dangerous, and it, I think the question needs to be asked then, are we using that as a justification for my singleness? I think that question needs to be asked. Like, you know, nobody can answer that for anybody else, but I think that question needs to be asked. Because for, you know, for the, well, I think in my class, the high school graduating class of 17 years ago, probably the group that I ran around with, it doesn't go half of my divorce. What happened if the marriage decision?
Yeah, I suspect that staying single because of, for those reasons, is about the equal but opposite of what was going on when my age gets married because it was the thing to do. I mean, it was equally weak.
Mm-hmm.
Neither are competent. And, the one thing that just dawned on me, we were wondering about that prior question of the transition of society. I think the mere fact that most of us here tonight are single also speaks eloquently to how great the transition is in society toward that formation. I get uptight, I guess, that the church doesn't take this question or the needs that we're raising here with adequate seriousness. How do you respond to that? I mean, how do you see it? Do you see it that way, or am I off base, or what?
I guess it's one of those things, you know, going into the park and listening to my father, especially talk about younger couples who would come to him. And now, as opposed to the 50s, or even in the 60s, he will discourage. You know, I never had before, I think. I've never done much less, though. By the clergy, I don't know if he's unique in that sense or not.
He's now currently, did you say, that
There are situations which, after enough time,
but it's after 10 o'clock. Let me first say that we're going to declare a 60-second adjournment at this point, because we always officially close at this hour with the forums. And then we'll pick up again with those of you who want to move on.
And what's the next thing we're going
to do? Okay. I would like us to move to that third question. I thought we would be through by now, and that should have been. But what are the key relational questions that we're wrestling with in our life, in terms of our thinking? Okay? And try to see if we can bring some focus again out of these discussions for two purposes. One, I think we're going to see what we can do some more yet tonight by way of maybe some more pursuit of discussion. But let's first of all see if we can identify some common concerns that have grown out of these discussions. What are the three most significant areas of concern? Who would like to share? Sex was one, okay?
Friendship.
Communication.
Expectation.
Education. Wait, I Education?
Yeah.
Let's start from the beginning, so I'm tired. Sex. Expectation.
Communication.
Honesty.
Education. Security.
Or self-esteem.
Any others? The ones I've got so far are sex, expectations, communication, honesty, education, security, self-esteem.
It's kind of the opportunity, the lack of opportunity to meet other like-minded people. Mm-hmm. Similar situations, similar issues.
Opportunity to meet. Self-esteem. How are you talking about self-esteem then? A concern insofar as it grows out of a relationship, or how is there present prior to and exclusive of a relationship?
Prior to, just the feeling of self-worth.
Self-worth.
Operating from self-confidence instead of
insecurity. Well, it ties back in with that question we were dealing with a little bit earlier in terms of taking our meaning from our work.
Also, what Susie was saying about thinking of ourselves as
a half, half, half. Yeah. I mean, half looking for a half to make a whole. Okay. Security was, how are you dealing with that?
Commitment.
In terms of commitment. Okay. And that would have overtones then also of fidelity, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Would that be, was that part of the discussion?
You mean like commitment of friends being committed to you without being married to you? Is that what you mean?
What was the commitment question? Maybe I didn't understand.
I didn't clarify it.
You're talking about a marriage commitment, right?
No.
Well, fidelity, okay.
I think fidelity is a question of any relationship.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Married or single, frankly. But that's my personal, I don't want to load that on you. But it's not appropriate, so I'll take it off.
No,
that's fine.
Fidelity is a across-the-board kind of issue, right? I guess one is kind of lost in our culture. Okay, how about intimacy? Yeah, that was somebody said it.
In a book called titled "The Sexual Celibate" by Donald Gorgon, who is a Dominican priest of all things. I mean, if he were to get on, it's her book and. The title, I think, is misleading, and one of the things that he talks about is the need for intimacy and splits that into a number of different levels, so that is a much broad term. Mm-hmm. Social intimacy, sexual intimacy.
Well, I don't mean by sex intimacy. I don't mean to put those together in one category.
Yeah, well, I was trying to say that expand the term. You know, who you tell that you're, you know, either that you're going through a major identity crisis or that, you know, that your car blew up today, or you stubbed your toe, or the washing machine ate your dime in the laundry.
Or that something new happened.
Or that something, yeah, very different.
Sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay. Which are the most crucial in this? I want to agree with you, depending on people like that. It's got to be up there at the top, because I think that's a key concern. My guess is. Sex, intimacy, expectations. Expectations meaning what, Karen? Of the other, or of?
Relationship. No.
My hidden agenda is that I think out of this we ought to be able to identify some stuff with ongoing discussions here. I mean, I'm leaving, but there's no reason why this information can't be related to the next person who's coming in, and or that we make good use of this because we've done some good work here. Communication, I think that's, I suppose that's, what's the educational concern?
Oh,
that's me. I mean, can you define that a little further? Just add a little clarifier.
Well, hypothetical situation here. I'm coming home from a hard day's work, and there's my husband slaving away at the stove, and I say to him, "Boy, did you hear about what happened in Namibia today?" And he says, "Where's Namibia? Or where's South America?" I mean, he has to know something about what's going on in the world, and he has to know how to add two and two and be a little bit educated. Otherwise, you can't communicate with them. That's maybe part of the communication.
Well, we could put educational differences. Okay?
Yeah.
Put it in.
Yeah, really.
Attention setting kind of situation. Okay. Honesty meaning how candid you are, or how honest we are, or what do we mean by honesty?
I think being honest and not even missing a dating relationship, just to tell the person how you feel about that person, and not to try to put your foot around and say, you know, well, I really, and not be honest with them, but be totally open with them.
Mm-hmm. Openness is what you're talking about there.
Both persons in a relationship know what the relationship's about. In other words, honesty, you both understand the same thing, what's going on.
I think it's the willingness to say, I don't know what's going on here, and I am confused. I think that's where
But I think that you will know if you are open at the beginning of the relationship, then you won't have any trouble about being confused.
I honestly believe that for a long time, and I've been hitting my head against the wall, you know, and slowly learning. That's why I guess. You're touching nerves when you get reactive.
Well, I think honesty it's kind of like saying if your girlfriend has a real ugly dress on and you just say, I'm so pretty, but you know. Well, that's kind of not an exact situation, but honesty sometimes hurts. And sometimes you just kind of pad the honesty and kind of not really say what you mean. But
Well, the thing is that people can sincerely be expressing themselves without understanding each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard work.
It
really is.
Yeah. I'm trying to think that the question of sex is one that needs a tremendous
tremendous in-depth kind of exploration. We're not going to be able to deal with that. And quick, easy, simple way. And it gets into the end of the question. And it's a secondary question, I think, in one sense, because prior consideration, the communication I keep hearing as I listen to you, which is tied in with honesty, which is tied in with education, which is tied in with, well, yeah, I would want to argue very strenuously that sex is communication, number one. But because it still needs such development, yeah, I mean, that's standard, you know, sex is communication. And that's
the other thing is that we are sexual beings, and we choose how we use that sexuality, and that's another something that is on a number of different levels in our lives and our relationships. Mm-hmm. It's not just sexual.
We're not talking about simply the act of sex. We're talking about sexuality, right? Okay, the whole yeah.
Sexuality being part of total health. In that sense, being part of total health.
But you know, all of these. As you look at the four, where do you come out as priority concern?
It seems to me that a lot of this, what it's saying is really gets back to what I thought was a really more important point that Jeff said and Scott kind of dropped, is that you need to develop relationships, whether you're married or not, which allow you a certain kind of a certain level of intimacy. We talked about commitment and honesty. It seems to me all of those things are what some people probably wrongly expect totally to come from marriage.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, he's talking about being married to the career and how unsatisfying that is, and that's the reason. So, and that you need people with whom you communicate. But then Susie started out by saying you're never a whole person.
One of the most incredible conversations I ever had with a friend was this year. She's been married 10 years. Nancy and John and I together. And I said, gee, you know, Nancy, what's it like to be married? I bet. Or I said something like, I can hardly wait to get married because then I won't be as lonely as I am now. And she said, no, Suze, I'm lonelier married than I ever was single. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you can always go date someone else. I'm married. That's it. And so I started going down systematically, you know, one thing at a time. And we, what was just not the other mark, went for 3 or 4 hours. And suddenly I began to see marriage from a totally different perspective. And that's exactly what you just said.
I think it's easy to get into the rut of thinking that marriage is a cure-all. For me, a big breakthrough in the conversation with a friend, she's been married for 35 years. And it's a real neat marriage. I can see it. It's a really small, family thing. And we were talking about being alone and being lonely. Being alone is okay as far as I'm concerned. The lonely feelings aren't that comfortable. And for her to say that she's lonely too, you know, when she's married and has been for 35 years, it was a big, conflict.
Yeah.
It broke things wide open because marriage is not a cure-all. It doesn't mean all of them.
Well, what's the telling that there's, I heard years since I read it, but it was a Norwegian novel. But in it, this young fellow becomes enamored of this really, as I recall, very brilliant woman who is a leader and but he pursues her and she's disdainful of him throughout three fourths of the novel. Finally, he wins her into a relationship and into marriage. The day after the marriage, Estelle is standing in the window of the bedroom looking out and realizing he's still alone. Mm-hmm. Images, but factual. I mean, that's a further point. Surely, not a cure-all. That is not to say, on the other hand, that it's not. I mean, we're always in that difficult situation between the weighing both benefits and liabilities of marriage. But and tonight is even clearer. If anything, I've heard marriage critiqued more negatively than positively. Have I heard you correctly? I'm going to reflect back to you kind of what I've been hearing. If so, I would say, hey, that needs rethinking. Or at least the reasons you're saying it need to be reexamined. I'm not sure it's weighted one way or the other. But if it tends to be weighted in one direction or the other, then I think it perhaps needs to be written down. But my feeling is that I don't know if you're as tired as I am. I am extremely tired. And I'm having a hard time at this point with the kind of breadth of concerns and interest to know how to pursue in a meaningful way beyond this right now. I'm going to take the information that we've got here, reflect with Susie and Jeff further, and any of those of you who are interested in doing that, to shape some future possible suggestions on how we might proceed from this point. I want to thank both Susie and Jeff, but thank all of you, because I am really amazed by the kind of readiness to share and struggle with.